بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. حضرت مفتي محمد الشفيع صاحب رحمة الله عليه أسكود الحديث إني استفسير that some person will come on the day of Qiyamah when his book of deeds is presented to him, he'll complain to Allah Ta'ala, "Oh Allah, I have done so much work and I don't see any mention of my works in this book." So Allah Ta'ala will tell him, "It's true what you are saying, that you had done so many works and they are not recorded in this book. And the reason for it not being recorded is that you made ghibat. So your backbiting had wiped out all the good deeds that you have been doing. Was the Shaykh Rahmatullah Alayh, when the i'tikaf used to take place at his place, so he would say, "Eat as much as you want and sleep as you like, just don't talk only." The only pabandi, the only restriction was that don't talk. Because at the time a person is fasting, then he can eat so much. How much can he eat? He can eat so much. And he can sleep so much only. But talking and the use of the tongue, that's unlimited. The more you talk and the more you want to talk, the more you open your mouth and the more you want to open your mouth, there isn't a point where you feel tired. Oh no, it's enough is enough. Just want to go on talking. So that's the state of the tongue, that it goes on talking. There is no leash on the tongue. There is no stopper on the tongue that may stop it. It just goes on. And then it seems so innocent. You don't consider the crime to be a crime. وَهُوَ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ عَزِيمٌ. Many a times, this crime that has been committed with the tongue is very serious in the sight of Allah Ta'ala, but it looks so innocent. You're just talking about it. Now this crime of ghibat is so rife and it's so common, and in so many ways we get engaged in ghibat. Sometimes through the media we get engaged. There is some ghibat that is being spoken about an individual, so you become a passive partner to it. You want to know what's going on, so you become a passive partner. You have already become a partner in that guna. Sometimes it's coming down onto your SMS. Sometimes it is coming in your mail. Sometimes it is coming on the phone. Sometimes you are meeting a friend and then, by the way, he's mentioning certain things about some people. And you don't even realize it, that you have got engaged and you got caught up, you got consumed in ghibat. So many times and so many occasions, and you just get caught up, you just get drawn into that sin. And you don't even realize that I've been drawn in this sin. There must be some reason why Rasulullah Pasam had to say, "Al-ghibatu ashaddu min al-zina." That zina is looked down upon. A person who's committed zina, the whole world looks down upon him. Even 10 years later, after he's made tawbah, and we see him, we still introduce him in that way, that this person was caught for zina. So we look so much down upon that person. But ghibat is even worse. Backbiting is even worse. So the reason why backbiting is even worse than zina is that the one that commits the wrong of zina, then he feels bad about it. He feels himself bad. "I've done something very shameful." And the world is looking down upon him. He feels shameful. He feels miserable. He feels wrong about what he has committed. But the one that does ghibat, he doesn't feel bad about it. Oh, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, he can be engaged with you, or even 1 hour in ghibat. And in the next minute, he's completely fine. He thinks nothing about the wrong that he has done. Here for days, sometimes months, sometimes years, he's got that memory of the wrong that he has done. And here he's got absolutely no memory. talks about it, and the next moment he's absolutely fine, doesn't think anything about it. That is why Allama Shami Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, he mentions the different classes of ghibat, different categories of ghibat. One is when you talk to someone about your brother in his absence. One is you write about your brother in his absence, right? You're writing about him, but it's ghibat. And the third is where you are a passive partner, you are listening to the discussion on ghibat. That's a third. And the fourth is where you say, when someone is being praised, and someone is being honored in your presence, then you say, I know about him, don't worry, I know about him. So, you made ghibat in a very subtle way. In a very, very subtle way, you tried to protect your image and everything else, but you made ghibat of the person, you have flawed him down. So now I know about him. You don't have to praise him, I know about him, don't worry. So you have run him down. That's the fourth way. And the fifth way is the way of some pious people. So they want to guard their piety, but they don't want to lose out on that ghibat information. So when ghibat is made in his presence, or he has to just mention the person's name, that Yusuf, may Allah Ta'ala forgive us and forgive him as well, all our gunas, all our gunegars. All our gunegar, he is also gunegar, you all gunegar, Allah Ta'ala forgive us. So he tried somehow to camouflage that ghibat by saying, Allah Ta'ala forgive everybody. So the listener knows exactly, now this person is talking about some ill of this person here, but in a different way. Allah Ta'ala forgive everybody. So you have run him down, but you run him down in your style. See? So that's the fifth way that explains that how you go on a smear campaign, how you run a person down. Then the sixth style that he says that is the worst of the lot is when that ghibat is taking place in your presence, or you are actively participating in that ghibat, and someone has to caution you by this is ghibat. So you tell him, by this is the truth, this is a fact. It's not a ghibat, this is truth. So really, this is clearly the definition of ghibat. Ghibat is to speak about the truth of your brother that is not liked by him, something that is not approved, not liked by him, about himself, but you're talking about it in his absence. So that is ghibat, clearly the definition of ghibat. So when you caution the person, he says, no, this is the truth, this is the fact that I'm talking about. There is no fabrication in this. It's not faked up, it's absolutely 100%. It's genuine what I'm telling you. So this is ghibat. This is exactly the definition of ghibat. And if it is a fabrication, then it's an allegation or it's an accusation, right? If it was a made-up thing, then it's an allegation or an accusation, false accusation. But if it was true what you're talking about your brother in his absence, then this is clearly the definition of ghibat. So he says, why this is so serious? Because the Quran Sharif has clearly mentioned the prohibition of ghibat. لا يغتب بعضكم بعضا. Then when you are engaged in ghibat and someone cautions you, then you're rejecting it. You say, no, it's not ghibat. So you're rejecting a clear verse of the Quran Sharif. You're considering a haram to be halal. You're considering a haram to be halal, rejecting a clear verse of the Quran Sharif. A rejection of a clear verse of the Quran Sharif amounts to kufr, disbelief. A clear verse of the Quran Sharif is mentioned in your presence and you absolutely openly reject it. So this is now one of the worst forms. Writing is also bad. Writing about someone is also bad, because writing against speech is worse, because writing is preserved. What you made ghibat of a person is preserved in the books or in the magazine or in a paper, it's preserved. Whereas you spoke to someone and it's forgotten, finished, it's lost in the atmosphere. But what you wrote, that is preserved, whether in the memory, whether in the data, whether in the paper, but it is preserved. Some way or the other, it is preserved. So how much of istighfar we need to make for this wrong, how much of caution we need to exercise for this wrong that we engaged in. We're looking at the paper, looking at the television, looking at the radio, and there is some smear campaign against someone or the other. The fuqaha have written, even against a kafir, you're not allowed to make ghibat. Yes, if there is a genuine need, it's a different thing. There is a genuine need, unnecessarily to go and waste the time speaking about people, really, it's not at all a sensible thing to do. Someone was asking, that, is it right to swear or to insult Yazid? You know, Yazid was a person who had committed a lot of atrocities, Sahaba-i-Kiram, etc., etc. A lot of atrocities, a lot of zulm he had committed. So is it right to speak ill about him? Or people like Hajjaj bin Yusuf, etc. So, answer was that rather than speaking about the enemy, you rather speak about the friend. Shaitan is the enemy, or the person that has done wrong to you or the ummah. If you're going to speak about him, then you're not getting anywhere. You're not getting anywhere. What are you getting? You're going to speak about him, then what are you going to get? So rather than speaking about the enemy, you rather speak about the friend, speak about Allah Ta'ala. Yeah, you spoke about the enemy, you didn't get anything. That was the one answer they gave. And the second answer they gave was this, that that person must speak against Yazid or Hajjaj, etc., who has got his place reserved in Jannat already. You've got your place reserved in Jannat, now you speak against him, it's worthwhile. But you yourself are in the same predicament. You don't know where you're going to. Going to Jannat or Jahannam. And you're speaking about other people that are on the line. They're on the line. They are now waiting for the procedure. They're waiting for the judgment. And you are none the better. Not that you have passed the line and you have gone through. No, it's not that you have gone through. You're still on the line. They're on the line and you're on the line. You don't know which side is going to turn. This side or that side. You're still on the line, and then you're speaking about him. So, if it were that you were thrown in Jahannam, then Yazid or Hajjaj will swear you, by what are you swearing me for? You none the better, what are you swearing me for? So, it's not a logical thing, it's not a wise thing, it's not an intelligent thing. Yes, I say where there is a genuine need, it's a different thing. A genuine need is an exception to the rule. A need is like, for example, someone is being oppressed. So I come and relate the oppression. A wife is being oppressed. She comes and mentions the cruelty that she is suffering at the hands of the husband. Why? So that someone can assist her and remove that zulm that is taking place against her. Or for example, if someone has got a wicked temper, he's not right in his ways, in his conduct, etc. And now he's doing business with you. You know, first hand, you know that he is a person practicing fraud. He is a deceit. You know about it, right? And now he is sending a proposal or he wants to enter into business with you, right? Now the third person that knows about this whole thing, your friend that knows about this, he doesn't caution you. He doesn't mention to you that this person is sending a proposal for your daughter. Or he wants to engage in business with you, he doesn't caution you that he's a fraud, he's a deceitful person, he's a wrongful person, or he's dealing in drugs, etc. You know about it, you're 100% sure about it that he is wrong. And this friend of yours doesn't caution you. Right? Now you get into some dealing with him, or you give over your daughter in marriage to this person here. And then you realize that this person here, these are his habits. Then how angered don't you feel? This person knew about it. My friend knew about it. Why didn't he caution me? Why didn't he warn me about it? So it was his duty to warn you. So in such situations where you're 100% sure, you're clear about it, then you can tip off your brother, you can caution off your brother. But then on the side of your brother, you mustn't go and advertise in the whole world, okay, you know what this person says, my friend says that he's a drug dealer. Or that my friend says that he's a fraud. My friend says that he's got very bad habits. So that's fitna now. That's corruption. What you are doing, you are promoting corruption now. Just cautioning him, warning him, that was a duty. But now you're advertising it and you're announcing it. Now this is corruption. This is trouble, you are causing mischief on the earth. That's wrong. So people are so weak in the intelligent, the reasoning, they can't think, but by this person has confided in me, he told me the weakness, so that I don't get trapped into this. He didn't tell me to go and advertise and to go and announce and to go and make a whole advertisement about this thing here. He didn't tell me that. They can't even reason to this extent. And then they want to talk about the fuqaha and Imam Abu Hanifa, Imam Bukhari sahab. But small little things, when you see them, they can't reason, they can't understand, they can't place things in perspective that this information was meant just for me. If I'm going to divulge this information, then this is going to be the consequence. They can't even understand, they can't reason. And they want to talk about big things about Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi and fiqh, and this is supposed to be like this, and this is supposed to be like this, and the law is like this. Why is it like this? I can challenge the law. So they can't reason simple, basic things, and how are they going to handle these complicated issues? How can they can handle it? So you see the disaster that is in the sin here, this ghibat. Now why is this ghibat so bad? One reason I've given you, the one that perpetrates this wrong, he doesn't even consider the wrong to be wrong. The second is this, the one that engages in ghibat, then he considers himself to be better, superior, one better than the person that he is backbiting. Therefore, he is backbiting him. If you consider him to be superior than you, then you wouldn't have backbiting. You wouldn't have engaged in backbiting. Like, for example, we speak about Junaid Baghdadi, rahmatullahi, right? So all of us believe that he's millions and billions of times ahead of us, all of us think. So we won't engage in any backbiting against him. Why? We consider him to be a very high, lofty, notable person. Right? But the person that we consider that he's alright, he's like us or below us, or he's weaker than us, now then we will backbite him because we feel he's nothing, he's insignificant. So now the source, the very thing that is the very catalyst, the thing that is spurring you up is your pride. What is inciting you? What is spurring you up? What is stirring you up on ghibat? It's your pride. That you consider yourself to be greater than that person, therefore you're engaging in ghibat. Had you considered yourself to be worse off, then you wouldn't have engaged in ghibat. Now if someone has engaged already, he's made a mistake, he's engaged in ghibat, then what should he do? One is he makes sincere tawbah. If the person that he has made ghibat about, if he's learnt about it, that you have engaged in ghibat about him, then without asking him for a maaf, you won't get maaf. If he learnt about it, that you have engaged in backbiting about him, then without asking him for a maaf, you can't get maaf, because he's feeling hurt already. You have hurt him, there's no way that you're going to remove that hurt without asking him for a forgiveness. So, you know, I stumbled, I made a mistake, I mentioned things that I shouldn't have mentioned, but please give me a maaf. So that is provided that person learnt about it. But if he hasn't learnt about it, doesn't know about it, then the fuqaha have got different statements about that. Some say, no, you have to still ask for maaf. And others say that what you should do is ask for forgiveness on your behalf and his behalf, continuously. Ask Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness for yourself and for that person, number one. And number two, in the presence of those that you have engaged in ghibat, then go and retract. Say, no, you know, I spoke this about this person here. I slipped up. It was wrong. I retract my statement. My statements were incorrect about this person here. I retract. So you've got a clear record between yourself and Allah Ta'ala. Remember, with people, you can play some games and tricks. You know, you can maneuver your ways. Right? You can be fraudulent. You can deceive. You can sneak away. You can be shrewd and you can sneak away with people. But with Allah Ta'ala, how can you sneak away? How can you move away? How can you commit fraud in the court of Allah Ta'ala, the one that knows exactly what's in your heart? Your intentions, deep-rooted intentions that are lying deep within your heart. How can you ever commit fraud with Him? How can you deceive Him? You can't deceive Him. You may deceive the world, but you can't deceive Him. He knows exactly what's in the heart. That very concealed intention, He knows exactly about it. So the way to get a maaf then for this type of situations is then continuously ask maaf for yourself and for that person, number one. And the second thing what the fuqaha say is that in the presence of whom you have engaged in ghibat, then go and at least retract those statements. You know, you said this about this person here, this about this person. So go back to him. Go back to that person. No, no, I just withdraw my statements. Those statements were not correct. They were incorrect. They were unfounded. They have got no basis. So I retract my statements. So in this way, inshallah, it is hoped that Allah Ta'ala will forgive you. But overall, look at the severity of this crime here. Al-Mu'ad Thami Sabram explains in one place, he says, you sit for a whole month on i'tikaf, in i'tikaf, right? You'll find a clarity in your heart. You did it correctly. You didn't engage in wrong things. You'll find some goodness, some nur, some very good spirit in your heart. Then just engage in ghibat for 10 minutes, just as an experiment, and see. All the goodness that you've acquired, all is washed out. All is flushed down. Just with the 10 minutes of ghibat, misuse, abuse of the tongue, and you see all the good that you have acquired, and it's just washed out. So you see the disaster of the tongue, the wrong that the tongue brings about. Now people wonder, a small thing like this, and it's caused such havoc, it's caused such problem to my life. Yes, sometimes this little misuse of the tongue brings about enormous destruction. You don't realize it. See? Just look at this, look at this. One statement a person makes, like you say, you tell someone, if there's a dawat, for example, and your friend is coming up to the dawat, right? So you pass a remark against him and you tell him, you, wherever there's food, you are there, man. You just like food, you're like glutton. Right? Just one statement, you're like glutton. You're just after food, you know, anything for free and you are there, you know. What happens? Now that statement gets stored in his memory. For the rest of his life, this is the opinion that he'll have about you. Okay, this is what this person thinks about me, and I can't forget this. Right? Or he says some other statement, for example, he says, you're son of a dog, for example. He just says that statement, one statement, three letters. But doesn't that affect you? It affects you for the rest of your life. Yeah, this person, this is how he swore me, this is how he insulted me, these were the words that he used against me. Just three words. And the three words, they hurt you and they damage you so bad that you feel it's an unpardonable crime. How can you have done this? Even if he asks you for a maaf, but then do you think, no, but this person, this is what he spoke about me, or he spoke about my son, or about my wife, or about my children, this is what he said. So you can't seem to forget, you can't seem to erase it from your memory. So you see that this mistakes of the tongue, the slips of the tongue, don't take it lightly. Don't think it's a small thing. You think that slip of the tongue is a small thing. No, sometimes it brings unrepairable disaster. It's a disaster, unrepairable. You can't. So the simple thing is think before you have to speak. You think about it. How should I address myself? I need to say something. How should I conduct myself? It's a way how you approach a situation. You approach the situation correctly. You think about it, is a guna. Do I need to discuss this? Is there any benefit in it? Or is there any harm in it? And then you take the step, then inshallah, there is good about it. There is good in it. But you don't think about it. You just, something just comes in front of you and you let it go. You just let it drive. Someone can introduce his mother, for example. He can introduce his mother in this way, that she is my dear, respected mother, right? There's one way. And the other way he can introduce his mother, he can say, this is my father's girlfriend. Right? Did he say anything wrong? He didn't say anything wrong. But is that acceptable? It's not acceptable. It's not acceptable at all. Just a few words. You know, you didn't think about it, and you just let it go past your tongue. Now, what unrepairable danger it brings about? It's disaster. Now, the person thinks of you, and he's got a very poor, weak opinion about you. This person is not a right person. He will hurt you. He will injure you. It's better you keep a distance away from him. Just one line. You know? So the simple procedure is, before talking, then think about it. And consider your words to be deeds. See, why we slip up is because we don't consider our words to be deeds. But the person who considers his words to be deeds, then he will be very cautious, because my deed now is going for me, it's going against me. It's going for me or it's going against me. مَا يَلْفِزُ مِنْ قَوْلٍ إِلَّا لَدَيِّ رَقِيبٌ عَتِيدٌ. The Quran Sharif says very clearly a single word that you say, Maya al-Fizu min Qulin, just one single word, immediately there are angels that are recording it. Acha, one word he mentioned. He stated this one word, and this one word is immediately recorded in his book of deeds. The hadith in Tirmidhi says that sometimes a person speaks about something and he doesn't consider it to be a serious thing. He doesn't consider it to be a serious thing. But that statement is so serious in the sight of Allah Ta'ala that it drops him right into the pit of hell. Perhaps he mentioned a word, a statement, that created some type of dissension within the Muslims. It created some type of disunity within the Muslims, one statement. And for the one statement that he made, it dropped him right into the pit of Jahannam, one statement. So that statement can be so serious, one statement, and it can drop you so hard. But the same token, if you thought you were careful, you were cautious about what you were speaking, and you said the right thing, it brought some unity. It didn't break up the ummah, it brought the ummah together, there was love. You enhanced some muhabbat. And you did something for the betterment for the ummah. One statement, two statements you made. Someone is speaking about whoever, say Yusuf, whatever. And you know, he's a wonderful person. No, it's a person that you are mistaking, you know. He's a different person than what you think of. So you spoke in a good way about him. You enhanced muhabbat, a relationship. So the hadith says that sometimes that one statement that is made, then it is so liked and beloved in the sight of Allah Ta'ala that it takes you to the very heights of Jannat. Yeah, it will take you to the pit of Jahannam where you're not cautious and you have a little bit of thought, a little bit of understanding, and you came out in a nice, right way. You enhanced and you furthered and you promoted muhabbat between the Muslims, between the ranks of Muslims. And that one statement can take you so high. Allah Ta'ala grant us tawfiq.